Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. Many of our followers turn to us to help detox their body as they try to conceive. Limiting your EDC exposures is one of the significant ways to improve your hormone balance, but it won't fix everything. So we must also live a healthy lifestyle in general, which includes exercising. And however, like too much exercise can also start to have a negative impact on your hormones. Navigating this fine line can be tricky. That's why we're really excited today to speak with our guest, Julie Durr. Julie is a certified and integrative health coach and a faster ways to fat loss coach. She's also a physical therapist and a certified athletic trainer. So we're going to discuss how exercise impact hormones, how often we should exercise for hormone balance, and then Julie will give us some exercise tips. And I have to say, she has the best abs I've ever seen. So we should all learn from her. So Julie, I saw you. Oh, here you are. Hello.
I'm so sorry about that. I'm terrible at updating my app. So I'm glad I got that done quickly.
It's all good. So nice to finally see you. Like, I've been following your exercise like videos, and it's amazing. And then, like I mentioned in the introduction, you probably have the best app anybody would have interviewed.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, I definitely, as a 54-year-old, don't have the abs that I used to have, and after having four kids too, but I try. So
54? No way.
Yep. Time flies. Time flies when you're having fun.
That is amazing. So tell us a little bit about your background, like how you became a health and wellness expert.
Okay. And I first have to apologize for that noise you hear behind me. My puppy's here with me. And she, if you hear that scratching noise, that's her doing her little tunneling in the carpet. So I actually, I've had a long history of being interested in health and wellness. I was a high school athlete, so I played a lot of different sports and then ended up going to college thinking I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. I kind of changed focus and then decided to go to physical therapy school. So I became a physical therapist, 30 years ago when that degree was a bachelor's. Now it's a doctorate. So I actually have a bachelor's in PT, and then I also became a certified athletic trainer at the same time. So I work with a lot of college level teams all through college. And then I my very first job outside of college was I was a physical therapist for the ladies professional golf tour. So that was a fun job, especially as the first job that I had, professional job. So I treated a lot of, sports related injuries. I traveled with the tour and took care of, the golfers and preventative things and also post-surgical things. And then I kind of switched focus and started working in outpatient orthopedic clinics. So all of that was great. But then in my late 20s, when my husband and I decided we wanted to start having kids, probably like a lot of clients that you see or people that you talk to, it wasn't that easy. So after a year of not being able to conceive, I started thinking, oh gosh, now what do I do? Luckily, at the time I was also exercising a lot. Mm-hmm. I was doing marathons. So I'm sure knowing now what I didn't know then, that played into kind of my difficulty conceiving. So luckily I was able to conceive, and then I ended up having four kids in 5 years, which was pretty crazy. But in the middle of that, I also lost a child to an ectopic pregnancy. So I realized that, now knowing what I do, my hormones were all over the place, in my early 30s when I was having kids. So I was also diagnosed with Hashimoto's when I was pregnant with my son, who's almost 19. So really almost 20 years ago, I started kind of on this health journey, trying to figure out, what do I do? Like, how did I get to this point? And so luckily I was introduced to a functional doctor at that point. And, 20 years ago, that was kind of unheard of. So at the time, she was telling me things like, you have leaky gut and toxins. She was talking to me all these things that I'd never heard of. We don't, in PT school, you study a lot about exercise, but you don't really talk about hormones and digestive health and all those other things. So I did stay home for a little bit of time with my kids. And then when I decided to jump back into the workforce, I decided, you know what, I still have my physical therapy license, but I wanted to do more of an integrative kind of approach. So that's when I got some advanced training. I became a certified integrative health practitioner. I also became a faster rate of fat loss coach. And just started utilizing all that knowledge and the things that I'd done personally to kind of work with clients. So a long journey, like a 30-year journey, but here I am, you know, in my 50s working with clients. I absolutely love it.
That is amazing. I felt like all your clients can really benefit from all your experience and knowledge, and also, you know, coming from physical therapies and then many other certifications. So you mentioned a certified integrative health coach. So what is certified integrative health coach? And then, you know, how can they help people to, you know, balance their hormones?
Mm-hmm. So I looked at a lot of programs when I decided to get kind of an advanced, you know, education in more of an integrative approach. So it's, you know, functional training that integrates a lot of other aspects besides just diet and exercise. I did it through Dr. Cabral, who's a mentor of mine, through the Integrative Health Practitioner Institute. And he kind of teaches all of those that go through that training, what's called the de-stress protocol. And I'm sure you've heard different acronyms that are very similar, but de-stress stands for diet, exercise, stress reduction, toxin removal, which I know you speak a lot about, rest, emotional balance, success mindset, and scientifically backed supplements. So it incorporates all of the things that are really going to help optimize health, optimize hormones, and improve, you know, overall lifestyle.
Yeah, I think it's kind of summarizing you like some of the really wonderful posts. And then one of the posts recently is on how hormones impact our bodies, which like can make it harder to what we define as staying shape. So could you walk us through like, you know, the aging process, and then why do we start gaining weight as we age? I think everybody will want to look exactly like you when they're like in their 50s.
Well, thank you. Yeah. So as a 54-year-old, I can definitely speak to the whole aging process. As a woman that's gone through all the hormonal stages, you know, puberty, five pregnancies in 5 years, that perimenopausal phase where you're, you know, having night sweats and sweating and, you know, mood swings, all those things. And now I've been postmenopausal for several years. So a lot of things physiologically change that really impact women, especially gaining weight. One of the biggest things is muscle loss. So sarcopenia, that is just the loss of muscle, and it's a natural process. It happens to all of us unless you're doing something to counteract that. And it really starts in your 30s. So you know, way back before people are paying attention, they're starting to lose muscle. Mm-hmm. And most people lose about 1 to 2% of muscle mass loss per year. And that averages to about 4 to 6 pounds per decade. So every decade, starting in your 30s, you're losing about 4 to 6 pounds. And a lot of people don't see a change in the scale. In fact, they may weigh the same, but what's likely happening is they're losing muscle and gaining fat. Yeah. And then once you hit menopause, that just accelerates that much more. So when you hit menopause and you're, and I know a lot of your clients are younger trying to balance hormones, but still, even younger women that, you know, you see people that have low estrogen, low testosterone, low progesterone, even when they're younger. So when those hormones start to drop, then other things happen too, like decreased insulin sensitivity, which is also going to help you gain weight. You have increased systemic inflammation. So a lot of people, men or women, start having, you know, like orthopedic issues or just feeling not feeling so good. So they're not as active. They have joint pain and things like that. Also, that part of the aging process is not really affecting hormones directly, but you're losing bone mass too. And then something that a lot of people don't know about is as your hormones are decreasing, you're also not able to process lipids as well. So sometimes that increases fat, you know, deposits too. So lots of factors. And then another thing that people don't think about, and I'm sure you do again in relation to all the toxicity things that you are involved in, you know, you're exposed to toxins in utero. So you can imagine by the time you're my age, all the toxins you have in all your tissues, and that makes it that much harder to lose weight. So all of those things combined, you know, really, really can impact your weight. I see it all the time. I see clients that are doing the same thing that they've been doing, you know, for years, but all of a sudden they're gaining weight, and that's part of the, you know, physiology of why you're gaining weight.
So it's really important for people to understand these mechanisms so they can start early, like addressing each factor as they age.
So then you don't wait until like when you actually completely lose a lot of your muscle weight or gain significant amount of weight to start losing it.
Exactly.
So many of us like equate losing weight with increased cardio. So is that the most important or, you know, efficient way to maintain a healthy weight?
You know, if you'd asked me that question 30 years ago when I first started my professional life and I was running marathons and, you know, running all the time, and that was in the age of cardio in the, you know, 70s, 80s, and early 90s. Mm-hmm. Now we know better. I mean, science has proven that that's not the most effective way. I mean, cardio in conjunction with some other things is very beneficial, but cardio alone, especially the way a lot of people do their cardio, is usually not effective. And I've done some advanced training with a Dr. Stacey Sams. I don't know if you know who that is. She's an exercise physiologist. Mm-hmm. And she says some things profound that's kind of hard to understand it, you know, when you first hear it, but it makes sense. So she said, when people are exercising at a level that's too easy to be hard or too hard to be easy, mm-hmm. it's not. So let me explain that. So I see this all the time. Women get on the treadmill, women of all ages and men too, and they will put in, you know, 30 minutes on the treadmill, walk, jog, break a sweat, and walk away thinking, oh, I just, you know, burned 300 calories. Now I can eat 300 calories more. And that's one side of the equation versus the other people that are doing really high intensity exercises, maybe doing like nothing against some, you know, exercise formats. I used to do Orange Theory a long time ago, a couple of days a week, but people that are doing something like that every day can be really, really detrimental to their health. So they're doing exercising at a level that's either way too easy, they don't get that physiological change from making it more strenuous, or they're doing it way too hard, and then it's too much for, you know, their adrenals and their neurological system. So it's got to be a combination of, you know, the right kind of cardio, occasional HIIT, high intensity interval training. Walking is great, but also in conjunction with some strength training, some rest days, and a whole plan that involves all those things.
Wow. You just answered my next question. I was going to ask, like, you know, what are some negative impact of high intensity cardio, which you mentioned, like adrenal issues and a hormone imbalance. And then you also answered my question about the difference between high intensity and low intensity. So, yeah.
Well, I'll be the first to say, like, when I was having those hormonal issues trying to get pregnant, in my 30s, that was part of the problem. I was running, you know, 50 miles a week at a really high intensity. And I'm sure, you know, my hormones were out of balance. And even I remember getting my levels checked, my cortisol levels checked as a 30-year-old. And a lot of times, I'm sure you're familiar with the diurnal rhythm. You know, your cortisol should start rising in the morning right when you wake up and peak pretty early and then start declining to, you know, around 9:30, gets to a low point and stays like that so you can sleep. And a lot of women, if they're just go, 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 their cortisol stays high all the time. And they feel great when their cortisol is high because they have a lot of energy. You know, it's kind of like you're always in fight or flight. Mm-hmm. But what's happening is it's disrupting your blood sugar, your insulin response, also your sex hormones. You know, your progesterone tends to go low, and also your thyroid. So some of those things were happening to me. I just didn't really realize at the time. But yeah, so the difference between low and high, usually a high intensity exercise is something that's about 85% of your maximum heart rate. So that's a pretty high intensity. So general rule of thumb, which I'm sure you probably know, kind of an old way to calculate your maximum heart rate is about 220 minus your age. So if you're 20, your maximum heart rate would be around 200. If you're 50, it's around 170. So you want to do about 85% of that maximum. So in other words, you're going to be breathless. You're going to feel, you know, not be able to talk to your neighbor. That's a really high. You shouldn't be. If you're thinking you're doing HIIT, but you can have a conversation with the person next to you, you're not really doing HIIT. Or if you don't feel like you need a break. The other thing about high intensity is it's a very short duration. So a maximum when I do HIIT training is about 20 minutes. You should not do really hour-long HIIT classes because that's just a lot of stress signals. And on the flip side, low intensity is more like 40 to 50% of your maximum heart rate. So you get more into like a fat burning mode when you're doing a lower intensity. And just doing a combination of both of those is very effective because they stress your body in different ways.
Oh, wow. So if you have a hormone imbalance, like how much cardio should you do?
So if you have already know you have, dysregulated estrogen to progesterone or, cortisol, then I would probably steer clear of HIIT until you get some of that under control a little better. And HIIT stands for high intensity interval training for anyone that doesn't know what that acronym is. Walking is fine, but if you're kind of going down that path and you're able to better regulate your hormones, I'd say a maximum of 1 to 2 times a week for HIIT. That's what I personally do, and my hormones are much more regulated now after working on things for many years. But yeah, a maximum of about 1 to 2 times per week, and then walking or lower impact, lower intensity is okay to do much more frequently. I mean, I encourage my clients to actually walk daily, especially clients. I see a lot of clients that are trying to lose weight. So if I work with them to lower their calories, I absolutely do not want them to do a lot of high intensity because, counter to what a lot of people think, lowering calories and increasing activity and doing a lot of strenuous work can be counterproductive for hormones too. So if you're lowering your calories, I definitely don't want you doing really intensity. So just walking and being outside really stimulates, your parasympathetic nervous system, gets you kind of out of that fight or flight kind of phase. And if you are constantly in that fight or flight stage, it's really hard to burn fat because you've constantly got your blood sugar spiking and, that whole just cycle of physiological things that happen.
Which also makes you eat more if you keep doing that.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. So, you recommend increasing strength training to burn fat. How does, strength training kind of burn fat versus like cardio?
Well, so as we first talked about, you start losing muscle mass, and if you're not doing something to counterbalance that, then you're setting yourself up for more than likely increasing body fat. So strength training has a lot of physiological benefits. Increases testosterone, increases growth hormone, increases bone density. It helps increase insulin sensitivity. In fact, I have oftentimes have clients. I actually have a CGM on. I don't know if you've ever worn one, which
I love it.
I find very intriguing to see how my body responds to exercise. But so if you have a lot of muscle mass, you're actually like soaking up that glucose when you're eating meals. It's anabolic, so it helps you building that muscle is going to help you with all of those changes that we talked about initially. And just like cardio, you too much is too much. I mean, for strength training, I usually recommend anywhere between 2 to 4 times a week, depending on how much time you have. Some people like to do a longer session of maybe just a couple times a week. Longer sessions, and other people like to break it up more often. But yes, strength training is the number one thing that I have most of my clients do, and most of them, especially if they grew up in the same era that I did, or even women that are younger, 20 and 30, they think that the treadmill, the elliptical is the way to go. But strength training is going to be the number one thing that's going to help you just increase your metabolic rate at rest. I just was looking through some studies, and there was one study that had, I think it was a 10-week program. They had other people just walk, and then this group did strength training. And they had, after 10 weeks, a 7% increase in their metabolic rate. So just sitting here talking, their metabolism was 7% higher just because of that muscle mass. So it's important. It's one of the things that is fairly easy to implement. And the other thing with strength training is you have to make sure that you're eating enough protein to actually synthesize muscle. So those two things I work with clients a lot, eat enough protein and strength train.
So for people who don't have access to a gym, like what can they do to kind of improve their strength training?
And I don't have access to it. Well, I choose to work out at home. I am a big believer that you can do most of those things at home. If you have a set, and I'm in my little workout space, you can't see all the things, but if you have, a few sets of hand weights, different sizes, I really encourage women to lift heavier, especially, maybe if you've never lifted, you've got to start a little bit lighter. But lifting heavier weight is really going to cause that physiological change. So some hand weights. I also have a TRX strap. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
Yep, I can see that.
Some bands. You can get a lot of these things on Amazon. They even deliver, back in 2020, you couldn't get a hold of hand weights because everybody was working, but now you can. So free weights, you know, good exercise shoes, some bands and TRX and your own imagination. You know, you can do a lot at home. You don't need to belong to a gym. And unless you need that motivation, a lot of people need that accountability and motivation. So I understand that. That's, you know, that is one benefit of going to a gym.
And so if people at home, they should make sure to follow you on Instagram so they can follow your exercise too. I love it. What about yoga? Like, how could yoga kind of help with hormone imbalance?
Mm-hmm. So yoga is very good at stimulating the parasympathetic nervous system, which is, you know, the calm, rest, relax, digest nervous system. I don't know if you've done any podcasts or Instagram lives with talking about, you know, the parasympathetic versus the sympathetic nervous system.
No, we're going to have to invite you back to talk about that, because I think it's so important.
It is. And, you know, I tell clients, just like I've been talking about, you cannot burn fat if that's your goal. A lot of people don't have that goal, but or even balance your hormones when you are always in that stressed out state. So yoga is very good for helping you kind of balance that neurological system. It's also good for muscle strengthening. You're not going to get quite as many benefits as lifting heavy, but muscle strengthening, flexibility, joint mobility, those are all great too. So definitely I would encourage people to do yoga at least once a week, once or twice a week as part of their program.
What's an ideal, like, a workout regimen for hormone balance? It seems, you know, we talked about some cardio, HIIT training, strength training, and then yoga. Should you just like blend all of these like during a week, or what would be, you know, ideal, like, you know, from Monday to Sunday, what would you do?
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of work with clients to design a program that's good for them, because everyone's different. But in general, you want to do, you know, like I said, HIIT training 2 times a week maximum. So a lot of times I'll have clients do that like on Tuesday and Thursday. Strength training between 2 and 4 times, a minimum of 2. A lot of times I find to hit all of the muscle groups, I find 3 days is very effective. So I'll have clients do like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, strength training, Tuesday, Thursday, HIIT, yoga, Saturday, or, you know, they can change those days around a little if they want to do strength Monday, Thursday, Saturday, you know, if that works better for their schedule. And then also including some functional mobility as part of that program. So for instance, like doing HIIT and then doing some flexibility, functional mobility, stretching along with the HIIT so that they get that in as well. And then always making sure you do at least 1 rest day a week. You know, the saying has been around forever, but the saying that muscles are fed in the kitchen, torn in the gym, and created in the rest. You can't build muscle if you're not feeding enough or resting.
Oh, wow. Wow. I love it. Thank you for sharing such wealth of information. So what does the session with you look like? You mentioned your client. I felt like everybody can really benefit with a session.
Yeah. So I see all different kinds of clients. I see all different age groups. You know, a lot of women are kind of, you know, 40 plus, but I also see 20-year-olds. So normally I do, you know, just a thorough history with them and find out what their goals are. You know, a lot of people, I hate to say it, a lot of people want to lose weight. And I always say, we're going to work on all the foundational things, the, you know, the de-stress things, the diet, the exercise, the toxic removal, all those things. And then weight loss would be a side effect. So you've got to work on digestion, health, all of those other things. So depending on what their goal is, you know, I design a program that's good for them. I also coach a program called Faster Way to Fat Loss. So that's a 6-week program that kind of focuses on diet, macro cycling, so tracking your food, 30-minute workout. So there's an app that comes along with that that has kind of an exercise program, just like I spoke about, you know, with kind of those different parts in it. And then I have my own metabolic program. I also do a community detox every quarter. So I do a free detox. You just have to, you know, purchase your detox kit, and I do just education surrounding why it's important to, you know, keep your liver in good function and minimize your toxin exposure. So lots of different things that I work with clients on, but, you know, I like to not just choose one area. I like to just, you know, have a little diversity, and everybody has different goals and needs too.
Because they're also really interconnected. So by addressing all these aspects, then they can have a much more successful and more effective weight loss.
Exactly.
Tell us a little more about the functional liver detox kit.
Yeah, so I, I do that with through the person that I trained with, through the Integrative Health Practitioner Institute, Dr. Cabral. He has a detox that he created years ago. So the detox, you know, basically involves a couple supplements that support liver detox. So phase one and phase two liver detox also support digestion, because as you know, if you're not digesting and eliminating, your toxins are just staying in your body. You know, involves just an anti-inflammatory, low food sensitivity meal plan that's, you know, very easy. It's just a whole food meal plan. No special, you know, things you have to go by. But there is a detox shake and then a couple of supplements. And then I just support people with daily emails. I have a Facebook group and, you know, people can ask questions and, you know, just get more information about why it's important to keep your liver in optimal detoxification function.
That is amazing. Thank you so much for sharing all these things. And then also, I will see we have quite a few people joining this. So thank you, everyone, for joining as well. And make sure to follow Julie at Julie Durr. And then learn more about Julie's service by clicking our LinkedIn bio, by tapping the post promoting this Instagram Live. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge. We're going to have to invite you back talking about
it. It was fun. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Good night.
Bye. Bye-bye.